From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Tuesday, February 16th, 2016. We have a great show in store for you throughout this hour as we will talk about last night's Grammys. How pretty cool is that, right? I mean, Kendrick Lamar, my favorite artist, put on a show unlike anyone I have ever seen at the Grammys, okay? We'll chat about what took place last night. We'll also dive into the Peyton Manning University of Tennessee lawsuit that may or may not tarnish his legacy if he decides to hang up the cleats for good, I should say. So we'll talk about Peyton Manning. We'll also dive into the Time Izzo presser, which took place today at the Breslin Center. You'll get to hear from Izzo as he talks about how his team is preparing for this week's matchup. You don't want to miss that. Also, we'll have Tickle Tuesday for you. We'll give you a preview of the Wolverines and Buckeyes men's basketball game. All of that, as well as take your calls throughout this hour. If you want to be a part of today's show, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. Again, for this February 16th. All right, a big hats off goes to DeWitt football coach Rob Zimmerman and Ithaca football coach Terry Hesbrook. They are among a class of 14 that will be inducted into the Michigan High School Football Coaches Association Hall of Fame next month at the University of Michigan. Also, former Leslie coach Scott Farley, who is now at Jackson, is among the 14 individuals that will join Zimmerman and Hesbrook in the latest MHSFCA Hall of Fame class. Well-deserving of that honor. Michigan State's Kenny Goins, he had an MRI on Sunday night after suffering a knee injury during the Spartans' win over Indiana, and Coach Izzo says that he has a damaged MCL and meniscus and will miss about 2 to 4 weeks. Goins is a walk-on turned scholarship player and has been coming off the bench often for the Spartans, averaging 10.5 minutes a game, and has been pretty efficient throughout this year. We'll have more on the Goins injury in just a second. At 7 p.m. tonight, the 19-7 Michigan Wolverines basketball team heads to Columbus, Ohio to take on the 16-10 Ohio State Buckeyes. Caris LeVert, who has been battling an injury all year, says that he'll play as much as Beilein needs him to, so it is possible that we will see LeVert hit the hardwood for the first time in quite a long time. Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan Wolverines have made another big move in the recruiting world. This time for the 2017 class, Dylan McCaffrey, the nation's number two pro-style quarterback according to 247 Sports Composite, had just made a verbal commitment to the University of Michigan. Now, the last name may sound familiar as his older brother, Christian McCaffrey, is the running back at Stanford, who may consider to be the likely candidate for the upcoming Heisman Trophy next year. The Detroit Red Wings played a 1 o'clock game yesterday afternoon in New York against the Islanders. The Red Wings went with Jimmy Howard in net, and after a shutout first period, Howard and the Wings gave up 3 goals in the second, followed by another in the third. Now, Pavel Datsyuk scored the lone Red Wing goal as the Wings fell 4-1 against the Islanders. Detroit is now 29-19-9 and will take the ice again on Thursday night in Pittsburgh against the Penguins. Quicken Loans is finalizing details for a match involving Rory McIlroy and Ricky Fowler a week before the U.S. Open. Of course, a person familiar with the negotiations told that to the Associated Press yesterday. Now, the person spoke on condition of anonymity because the match has yet to be announced. Well, the cat is now out the bag. The match would be at the Detroit Golf Club on June 7th the Tuesday before U.S. Open Week begins at Oakmont outside of Pittsburgh. The first 2 hours would be televised live by the Golf Channel, followed by the 9 to 11 p.m. slot shown live on CBS. It was not clear how many holes will be broadcast under the lights. Pretty cool stuff there. The Kalamazoo Growlers, an independent minor league baseball team in the Northwoods League, has announced plans to, get this, wear an emoji-themed jersey for a home game in August. Now, fans can vote for their favorite emojis out of 100 options, and the top 25 will be featured on the jersey. They're calling it the Emo Jersey. Yeah, creative. Last summer, the team held actually a salute to selfie night, where the jerseys consisted of fan-submitted selfies. How cool is that? Now, meanwhile, the Tigers single-A affiliate, the West Michigan Whitecaps, could also sport an emo jersey during their social media night this season. Fans have three options to vote on, and the emo jersey is one of them. If you haven't seen the pictures of it, pretty cool stuff. Just a simple Google, folks, a simple Google. And last but not least, Filipino boxer Manny Pacquiao is under fire for recent remarks he made about same-sex marriage. Pacquiao, who is a politician and well-known conservative Christian, recently said, quote, "It's common sense. Do you see animals mating with the same sex? Animals are better because they can distinguish male from female. If men mate with men and women mate with women, they are worse than animals," end quote. Now, Pacquiao later apologized for his comment, releasing a statement saying, quote, "I'm sorry for hurting people by comparing homosexuals to animals. Please forgive me for those I've hurt. I still stand on my belief that I'm against same-sex marriage because of what the Bible says, but I'm not condemning LGBT. I love you all with the love of the Lord. God bless you all, and I'm praying for you." That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. It's about that time to start the show.
Glory to God, that's for sure. My foundation, my route to me being on this stage, Kenneth Duckworth and Paula Duckworth, those who gave me the responsibility of knowing and understanding, accepting the good with the bad. I'll always love you for that. Whitney, I will always love you for supporting me and keeping me motivated into being the best person. Top Dog, my Top Dog brother, Top Dog himself, us eating you out of house and home, we'll never forget that. Taking these kids out of the projects, out of Compton, and putting them right here on this stage to be the best they can be, we'll never forget that. Hip Hop, Ice Cube, this for Hip Hop, this for Snoop Dogg, Doggy Style, this for Illmatic, this for Nas, we will live forever, believe that, all right?
Welcome to WKER's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Happy, happy Tuesday, ladies and gents, boys and girls. We have a fantastic hour in store for your ears. You do not want to turn away from today's show. And I thought it would be fitting to start today's show by recapping the biggest event that took place last night. Of course, the Grammy Awards were held. And folks, for those that are dedicated listeners and have been tuning into Current Sports throughout our existence, you know that I am a pretty big Kendrick Lamar fan. He is my favorite artist. And last night was pretty cool for me because I was glued to my TV throughout the 3+ hours that the Grammys grace CBS, watching intently on, focused on, one man, that being Kendrick Lamar. It's so crazy because, you know, I started as a Kendrick Lamar fan. I remember being back in college, and the first time I heard this young man from Compton, California, I just happened to be around the apartment, you know, with my college roommates, Will and Johnny. And my roommate, Will, actually had one track blasting from his bedroom as we were just kind of cleaning up the apartment, which was a rare thing, right? So as we're cleaning up the apartment, you know, I'm listening to this one track. And I just had to stop what I'm doing. And I remember going looking at Will and saying, who in the world is that man? And he turned to me and said, man, there's this kid from Compton, California, man, is really ripping it up and getting a lot of following. And he said his name is Kendrick Lamar. And I'm like, Kendrick Lamar? I never even heard of this guy. And I remember that night, you know, he played a few more tracks. And actually, the track that he played is one that will forever have a special place because it was the very first Kendrick Lamar track that I heard. It was entitled High Power. And immediately, I remember that moment, you know, I went on my laptop and Googled High Power and the video. Oh, my goodness. If you haven't seen the video for High Power, it's absolutely stunning. And I became obsessed from that moment on. I remember that night I downloaded his mixtape, Overly Dedicated. Soon after that, Section 80 came out. And Section 80 just really kind of took his original work from even when he wasn't even known as Kendrick Lamar. I mean, he was originally known as K-Dot when he first came out. Then he changed his name to his actual name, which is Kendrick Lamar. But Section 80 kind of really put him on the map. And he kind of went from there. And he's just pushing music right now into a realm, especially in hip-hop terms, that we have not seen before. You know, hip-hop wasn't even a category in the Grammys until like the late 80s, I think. And Kendrick Lamar actually came one nomination short of tying the record for a single artist, which was 12, set by, of course, in my opinion, the greatest artist of all time, in Michael Jackson. Michael had 12 nominations one year. Kendrick Lamar this year came one short of that record with 11 nominations. Now, overall, Kendrick Lamar, I mean, goodness, I mean, first off, just to even think about 11 nominations is just off the charts ridiculous, right? But, you know, the rapper owned the night last night, a sweep of rap categories, collecting Best Rap Album for To Pimp a Butterfly, Best Rap Performance, and Best Rap Song for his All Right, as well as Best Rap / Sung Collaboration for his These Walls, which feature Bilal, Anawise, and Thundercat. Love that track. The rapper also filled the stage with an extraordinary, fiery, and just really captivating performance of The Black of the Berry, All Right, and his new song, which he actually entitled, you know, as Untitled 3. He's been doing these untitled tracks, and that was the third rendition of that series, I guess you can say. But it was riveting stuff. I mean, he came out in a prison suit with chains. He rapped there, and then, you know, he walked to another part of the stage. It really paid homage to African culture, theme music and dancers. He had a fire pit right in the middle as he performed, and then he just went off on his new track. I mean, it was really unbelievable. But Kendrick Lamar, I thank you, brother, for pushing the genre of not only rap, but just pushing music into a new realm and really pushing, you know, just really the creativity of where hip-hop can go. Mad props to him, and it was a thrill to watch him last night. All right, that's my love song from the Grammys last night. Phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Before moving further and diving into this really intriguing Peyton Manning story, to say the least, I want to invite the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, hailing from New Orleans, and he is also a pretty big hip-hop head as well. Isaac Constance, welcome to Current Sports. How you doing?
Thank you, Al. I'm doing well. Yes, congratulations to Kendrick Lamar. That was an incredible performance last night, an incredible night for him. Congratulations to my girl, Taylor Swift, as well. I threw a little bit of her in the buttons for today. She did win Album of the Year. But anyway.
She's talented, isn't she, though? I'm not a big Taylor Swift guy. You are. But her music, I mean, she's very talented. Watching her perform and open up the Grammys last night, she's awesome.
Well, it's been a big week for hip-hop in general, too, with Kendrick Lamar, of course, just sweeping the Grammys. And then, of course, Kanye West releasing The Life of Pablo, which I have not gotten a chance to check out yet since it's exclusively available on Tidal.
Right, exactly. Title. So and who owns title, right? I'm not paying for title. I already pay for Apple
Music.
But yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, I tried to look it up last night, but again, I saw that it was being exclusively streamed there and couldn't check it out. But though I do know a few friends of mine that have it, and they say that it's a pretty solid album. So
I've heard that too. More soulful than Kanye's recent stuff, and that's almost a throwback to his original few albums like The College Dropout, Late Registration, and Graduation.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, the Grammys was fantastic last night. Also, a big shout out to Lady Gaga for paying tribute to the late great David Bowie. I thought that was a very cool moment as well. And just moments before, actually earlier in the day of the Grammys on Monday, it was announced that Vanity, who is the lead singer of Vanity 6, don't know if you guys know much about Vanity, but she actually was Prince's girlfriend back in the day. She was a prodigy of Prince. And she passed away, though, at the age of 57. So rest in peace to Vanity. I don't know about you, Isaac, but Vanity was my very first crush in my youth growing up. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie The Last Dragon. Have you seen that?
No, I have not.
Oh, my gosh, you are missing out. That's your homework for this week. Check out the movie The Last Dragon. Vanity plays the love interest in the movie to Bruce Leroy, who was played by Ty Mack. But, man, she was stunningly gorgeous, and that was my first crush. But just really shocking news. She had problems with her kidneys, and just really shocking stuff, though. So rest in peace to Vanity, though. And I'm told that, I looked online, and I saw that Prince, actually, he got the news live on stage during his concert, almost welled up in tears, and immediately stopped what he was doing and paid tribute to her and did, like, this crazy, just in Prince fashion, this crazy rendition of like four songs. So,
wow.
Yeah, riveting stuff. So RIP to Vanity. She was certainly a charm. All right, well, let's dive into the sports news now. Peyton Manning, folks. Yeah, Peyton Manning. You know, this is really an intriguing story because it's one that personally I didn't know about until, I guess you can say, the lawsuit came out from this Title IX situation in which his name is involved in. And, you know, now that the news has really broke about this story, it's so interesting because I feel like a lot of individuals out there are immediately changing their I guess you can say, their perception that was once squeaky clean of Manning. But, you know, when really diving into this, I was actually doing some research last night in preparation for this conversation. And on many blogs throughout the years, throughout Peyton Manning's, 18-year career in the NFL, and this is a suit that is 20 years old, this is a situation that has constantly been brought up from those who are educated about Peyton Manning's stint at the University of Tennessee. This is not new news, folks. I mean, this is an incident that we're talking about occurred in 1996. And again, I looked at a few blog postings from years past, and many people have talked about this and always brought it up. But the thing is, it has not been a fixture when it comes to mainstream sports media. And the only reason this is now getting attention is because Peyton Manning is among the athletes cited in a lawsuit filed by a group of women alleging that the University of Tennessee violated Title IX regulations and created a, quote, hostile sexual environment through a policy of indifference toward assaults by student athletes. Now, the Tennessean first reported the lawsuit and Manning's involvement, and the federal suit was filed last week, Tuesday, in Nashville. It states that Tennessee's policies made students more vulnerable to sexual assault and had a clearly unreasonable response, I should say, after incidents that caused the women making complaints to endure additional harassment. The suit also states the university interfered with the disciplinary process to favor male athletes. Now, I'm wondering if we could do some quick research on this, Isaac. I know we have Brett Cast, our production assistant, behind the glass as well. But I am wondering right now, when I first read this story, whether or not this investigation into this Title IX into these Title IX regulations has anything to do or any connection, direct connection, to the situation concerning ESPN suing Michigan State for those very same Title IX documents, if you will. I'm wondering if there's a connection, because I know that ESPN was doing a nationwide university investigation as to how universities handle sexual assault claims on their campus. And I know Michigan State, they didn't release certain documents in a timely manner to ESPN. Therefore, ESPN decided to file a lawsuit. I'm wondering if this has any correlation to the situation that we're seeing at UT. But with that being said, we'll let you guys go to work on that. But to quickly give a rundown about this story, the Tennessee lawsuit alleges that in 1996, when Manning was the Volunteers quarterback, he placed his genitals on the face of a female athletic trainer while she was examining him for an injury. Now, Manning has denied that he assaulted the trainer, saying instead that he was mooning a teammate. Manning was never the subject of a police investigation into that incident. Now, the trainer, her name is Dr. Jamie Nallwright, later sued Manning in documents filed on her behalf in the case. The player whom Manning says he was mooning is Malcolm Saxon. Saxon actually refuted Manning's account. Nallwright's lawsuit against Manning was settled in 1997 with the agreement that she leave the university. But it didn't end there, because Manning later wrote an autobiography entitled Manning, A Father, His Sons, and a Football Legacy, in which he claimed that Nallwright had a vulgar mouth and described her and his interactions with her at Tennessee in an unflattering light. In 2003, Nallwright again sued Manning and his father, Archie, ghostwriter John Underwood, and HarperCollins Publisher Incorporated. The Tennessee lawsuit references a USA Today article about the matter. However, on Saturday, the New York Daily News published a more detailed description of both Nallwright's lawsuits, including her facts of the case filing in the 2003 defamation lawsuit, which you can check out online. Now, I want to make this be said when concerned, because I've been a lot of emails and a lot of tweets about when we were going to get to this story. And but before we dive into this conversation, I want to preface my thoughts on it by saying we don't know if this is true or not. I want to say that we don't know if this incident really occurred, whether or not Peyton Manning did, again, if it's really disturbing stuff, place his genitals on the face of an athletic trainer. We don't know if this is true. Again, the case was settled in 1997. But with that being said, we don't know that it's not true. So when hearing the dialogue about this conversation, it's so funny, because Peyton Manning is a guy who has had the squeakiest of clean images of any NFL player, really. I mean, he's looked at as the golden boy. He has been looked at as the golden boy of the National Football League for quite some time. People love him. I mean, people love his personality. You look at his commercials with Papa John's, and I mean, you could go on and on and on. Peyton Manning has had a relatively clean image, which has made him beloved in the sporting world. You know, for the most part, individuals, when you bring up Peyton Manning's name, I mean, he's adored, completely adored. And, you know, it just really surprised me, because, again, I didn't know about this case until this lawsuit came out claiming that the University of Tennessee violated Title IX regulations filed by a group of women. I don't know who those women are. So, again, I want to make that be known. I mean, we don't know if this is true or not true. And you can't dismiss that it didn't happen. You can't do that, because we simply don't know if it did or not. Now, pushing this conversation along, I also want to say that when we look at athletes, and this is something that I've constantly repeated over the years when discussing athletes as role models and discussing them as human beings and their perceptions, we really don't know who these athletes really are, folks. Unless you are best buds with these athletes, you don't know who that individual is behind closed doors. The example that I always bring up is who is still my favorite athlete today, and who I adored growing up, who I had a diehard love for. Tiger Woods was my guy, okay? Tiger Woods, I mean, I would sit up every Sunday, watch this man do things that no other human being ever did on the golf course. He was my guy. I had a Tiger Woods poster posted up in my bedroom. Loved him. And Tiger Woods, when you talk about perception and image, Tiger Woods was looked at as also a golden boy. Looked at as a golden boy. I mean, a child prodigy growing up, never did anything wrong, carried himself with class for the most part on the course, besides a profanity or two, if he would do something that wasn't in his plans, right? But Tiger Woods was looked at as the face of golf and the example of how you should be as an athlete. But then what happened? That all quickly went out the window in 2008. The situation with the golf club and his wife and, you know, him crashing his SUV into the tree, and then the countless women coming out that, you know, Tiger had, you know, relations with, and then the interview with Tom Rinaldi and Tiger Woods coming out and apologizing, I need to get back to my Buddhist ways. And Tiger Woods' perception of squeaky clean completely went out the window. But that's just a perfect example of how we don't know. We don't know. It may seem like it because we watch them every single game do what they do on the hardwood, on the field, whatever they do. We watch them so intently and never miss a game that we feel like we know them. But in reality, we don't. We really don't. When the cameras are off, that's it. We don't know what they do when they get home, okay? We don't know them personally unless you are like a close friend of theirs or family or something like that, okay? And, you know, for me, watching what Peyton Manning did on the football field, you know, throughout his career was certainly admirable. I mean, he will go down as one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever live. But now, this situation here with the Title IX lawsuit, which, again, is not new. This occurred back in 1996. It's new to many of us because I simply didn't know. What blows my mind is how this had been kept under wraps to the mainstream casual sports fan for so long. I mean, I had no idea this even existed. But now you have this. And now you have the allegations that Peyton Manning used, HGH. And Peyton Manning, you know, he just won the Super Bowl. You know, he's supposed to ride off, you know, into the sunset with the Super Bowl ring. You know, a great way to close out the Peyton Manning legacy. But now the question comes out now with this case and with the HGA situation is whether or not Peyton Manning's legacy is now tarnished. And I think for me to answer that question right now will be a bit premature. I don't know, Isaac. I really don't know. It all depends on how this pans out. What I think is going to happen with this case is it eventually is going to run out of steam. You can't really prove anything here because the case was settled back in 1997. Again, this is a part of a Title IX allegation case that looks into how the University of Tennessee handles quote-unquote hostile sexual environments. This isn't a case to find out whether or not Peyton Manning did do this. I think this will die out because you can't prove anything. With the HGH thing, I don't know how that will end. But I do think, I mean, again, I think it's premature to answer right now, but I do think in many people's eyes, this does put an etch on his legacy.
Yeah. I mean, it tarnishes his legacy, not because it's necessarily true, because we don't know that just yet. Not because the resurfacing of these allegations, I mean, these had already been around, but the fact that it gets enough publicity so that a lot of people hear about this. And when it dies out, not everybody's going to hear about that. Journalism 101, you learn that what you put out, you can never take back. What you put out instantly affects the community. It goes into the water, and you can't get it out there. Because one thing that I specifically remember was the University of Virginia rape case that earlier in this year, fraternity supposedly gang raped a young woman and things like that. The story was totally fabricated. But that fraternity had members expelled. It was kicked off of campus. The repercussions could not be fixed. They couldn't be amended because of the damage done by this one article. So I think this mere fact that this is resurfacing for Peyton Manning, it means that this will hang and loom in people's minds when they think of Peyton Manning. I think this forever damages his reputation, even if it's not true. That's what we have to see. If this is true, this is obviously a bigger deal. But no matter what, this initial news, the initial breaking of this is a big deal in people's minds.
But you know what? You say that, but then there's another example I want to bring up that completely goes on the other side of this. I also remember one of the most beloved basketball players who was actually on his swan song right now, in Kobe Bean Bryant. The situation out in Colorado in which he had sexual relations with an individual and she cried rape. And I remember when that happened, I happened to be like, you know, like a freshman in high school. And I remember when that happened, there were so many people that bashed Kobe Bryant. That we had the same discussion that we're having currently, right now, on whether or not this would tarnish, whether or not it would tarnish Kobe Bryant's legacy. Many people are saying, yes, without a doubt, this will tarnish his legacy. He cheated on his wife. Then he had a press conference with Vanessa sitting right there. He bought her a new ring. I mean, that it was just a really ugly and a really sticky conversation. But as the years have gone on, Kobe Bryant now, again, announcing that he is going to retire, that this is going to be his final NBA year, we don't hear people saying, hey, do you remember that rape case back in the day with Kobe Bryant? No, we don't hear that anymore. And the reason is because I think that Kobe Bryant, once that case, you know, went away and he moved on, he was so, this is the thing about Kobe. When it happened, Kobe just said, you know what? I'm going to use basketball as my getaway. And I remember him elevating his game into a stratosphere. I think arguably that was like when Kobe Bryant was at his prime. He shut a lot of people up with just him being a fantastic basketball player, making people forget about it. But do we hear, have we heard throughout this year, this NBA season, about Kobe Bryant's legacy being tarnished because of what happened out in Colorado, you know, during with the early 2000s? You don't hear about it at all. That's something that died down after a while. You know what I mean? So the thing that puts Peyton in a harsh situation now is that he can't shut up people by just going out there and being great on the football field, because ideally we just saw Peyton Manning's last game.
And even if it's not, he just can't be great on the football field anymore. He's just not that good of a quarterback. Right now, he's a below average starter at best. Mm-hmm. But the thing about Kobe Bryant, while maybe we might not hear about it right now, especially since it's his retirement tour and he's being eulogized and extolled and everything like that. He's being praised by just about everybody in the NBA. But that's still hung in people's minds for a while. And when he retires, I'm not so sure that it won't disappear again. Larry Nance Jr., the Lakers' first-round draft pick from this year, actually got in trouble with Kobe Bryant because he had a tweet from, I believe, 2012, when he was a basketball player at Wyoming, saying something of the along the lines of, remember Kobe Bryant's rape case. Don't everybody suddenly turn him into some hero. Remember the rape case. He had a tweet about that. So some people still do think of that when it comes to mind.
But it's not as imminent.
It's not as imminent.
It's an afterthought, to be honest. I mean, that took place, what, in 2003, I believe, 13 years old, when that happened. I remember that happened, and I remember everyone. I mean, every venue Kobe would go, I mean, he was completely booed. People hated Kobe Bryant, for lack of a better term. So I don't know where this is going to go. And now what's also interesting, we're looking at the big picture of this, though, and this whole, you know, suit, you know, women alleging that the University of Tennessee had violated Title IX regulations. I mean, not only are we talking about Peyton Manning involved in this suit, but, you know, the suit also, you know, the suit against Tennessee, you know, names 10 players as well, including former football players, Manning, of course, A.J. Johnson, and Michael Williams. The later two were indicted on aggravated rape charges in February of 2015 and have separate trial dates this summer. But the suit was filed by David Randolph Smith, a lawyer representing 6 unidentified plaintiffs against the University of Tennessee and the director of the Office of Student Conduct and Community Standards. No individuals were named as defendants in the complaint. But it's just amazing when looking at, not only is Peyton involved in this situation, but there are 10 other players involved in this. And it begs the question whether or not universities across the board, across our nation, are doing what it takes to thoroughly investigate sexual charges against athletes. Because there is a looming perception over the heads of many individuals that athletes, especially the primetime ones, they get a pass on many, many things, including sexual aggravated assault. That's just how it is today. So maybe we'll see a spiral when it comes to this conversation, not only at UT, but at universities across the board. I'm curious to get your thoughts on it. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will take you to the Breslin Center. That's right. Hear what Tom Izzo had to say concerning this week's upcoming matchup against Wisconsin and so much more. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to Current Sports. All right, folks. Well, the Grammys are in the books. You know, February is always a big month, not only in the music world, but also in the film world, because the Grammys take place and the Oscars take place. The Oscars will actually be held on February 28th. And in honor of the Oscars, throughout this month here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are having our battle of the top sports movies of all time. So far, we had the Rocky series topping Moneyball in the 1 versus 10 matchup. Last week, in the 2 versus 9 matchup, we had Hoosiers defeating the Karate Kid by just one vote that was actually called in yesterday because we were tied at the end of Friday's show. So Hoosiers moves on. As much as I hate to put Karate Kid to bed, Now, this week, we have Robert De Niro in Raging Bull versus the Mighty Ducks. Isaac, I got to know who your vote is going to so we can tally it up, man.
I'm going with the Mighty Ducks. It's the only hockey movie that I really enjoy and have watched before. I've watched Miracle. I really like that as well. It's a great story. But hockey just in my sport growing up in the South. But Mighty Ducks, it's the nice little take on it with the cartoons thrown in and everything like that. So I really appreciate Mighty Ducks. It was one of my favorite sports movies growing up as a kid.
I will say I really like Raging Bull. I thought it was a fantastic acting performance by De Niro. I mean, it was absolutely unbelievable. It's actually a Martin Scorsese film, I believe. Joe Pesci is also in it as well. But it's a story of a middleweight, and it fascinates me because a lot of people haven't seen Raging Bull. You know, just casually. You know, if I'm like my stepdad, I'm talking to him the other day about our battle of the movies. I'm like, yeah, the next round we have Raging Bull versus the Mighty Ducks. He's like, Raging Bull, what is that? I'm like, dude, are you kidding me? It's an amazing movie.
Know it?
No, he's heard of it. He heard of it after I had to describe it a lot, though. I mean, like, yeah, you know, De Niro, it's all black and white, blah, blah, blah. Story of a middleweight boxer, he rises, and, you know, it's kind of like a Rocky story in a way. But after I described it a while, he's like, oh, I know that movie now. But a lot of people don't. It's kind of slept on a lot. But for me, I love Raging Bull. I thought it was a fantastic, fantastic, fantastic film. But I got to go with my childhood. Mighty Ducks was my childhood growing up in the 90s. That was a huge movie. I'm going with the Mighty Ducks here. So I guess it's 2-0 right now. Oh, Brett, we got Brett back there. Brett, you want to put in a vote, dude? What you got, man? Mighty Ducks or the Raging Bull?
Well, seeing I haven't seen the Raging Bull, I might go Mighty Ducks with that.
There we go. Okay, he's going to Mighty Ducks as well. But I mean, if you look at the reviews on Raging Bull, I mean, it's got 4 out of 4 stars on Roger Ebert's site, and on Rotten Tomatoes, it's got like a 97%. So
who has 4
crazy
stars though? That's weird.
It's a Roger Ebert thing. It's a Roger Ebert thing. I don't know, but yeah, it's a fantastic movie if you haven't seen it, folks. So all right, so I guess it's 3-0 already. Raging Bull, I'm going to have to climb out of a hole here. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Well, Tom Izzo, folks, at the Breslin Center this afternoon, he held his weekly press conference to address, of course, the week's matchup. This week, the Spartans will take on the Wisconsin Badgers, a team that is certainly rolling right now, to say the least. They have won 7 straight games. The Spartans will host Wisconsin this Thursday at 9 p.m. We want you to tune in to Thursday's show because we will actually be giving away a pair of tickets to check out that game. You do not want to miss that. But, you know, a few interesting tidbits from Tom Izzo's press conference today. First off, as we noted in our quick hit headliners, Tom Izzo talked about the loss of Kenny Goins. Now, he had an MRI on Sunday night after suffering a knee injury during the Spartan win over Indiana. Coach Izzo says that Goins has a damaged MCL and meniscus and will miss about 2 to 4 weeks. And he reiterated that today during his press conference. He said that Goins will be on crutches and will be out during that length of time. And, you know, with that being said, other guys, of course, are going to have to step up because Goins has been a spark plug off the bench for this team, providing the Michigan State men's basketball team with energy and efficiency in the box score of scoring as well. I mean, he's been great. He's been great for this team. So here is Tom Izzo on guys like, you know, Schilling, Deontay Davis, you know, Marvin Clark, on needing those individuals to step up in lieu of Kenny Goins being now out.
You know, Gavin, the last four games, last probably 2 weeks, has really, really, really improved in practice. I mean, he's in all the time. He was in early, you know, this morning we had a little walkthrough, but he was in after that. He's spending more time with Mike Garland in the film room. He's been in foul trouble again. You know, he gets two fouls early in this game. Then he gets his third early in the second half. And so he only plays 10 minutes a game. And I think he should be playing, you know, 15, 18 maybe minutes a game. I think he is going to be very valuable. I think Marv is still going to be important. And I think Didi, you know, got to raise his game a level now, you know. And we spent some time with him. I know Draymond did yesterday, too. It was fun. But, you know, he's got to, because he's got it in him. So I'd say those two guys a lot. And Marv, it'd be nice if all the stuff he's gone through and he's battled back and he's hung in there. And a guy that I thought would start in November ends up a key role like he was last year down the stretch. It'd be poetic justice for a guy who, you know, didn't quit. You know, was he bummed out some? Of course. I mean, I wouldn't want a guy not upset about those things. I wouldn't want Javon not upset about those things. But hasn't changed his work ethic in that. And he, too, has had a good couple of weeks. So those guys are going to have to be better now because we're running into a lot of teams, as you know. You play Purdue, you play Michigan, then you play Purdue, and then you play Indiana. As I told you, that is three completely different kinds of teams to guard. And versatile players. Gavin's a little more versatile. Kenny is very versatile. It's putting, you know, as I said to Didi this morning, you know, that he's got to keep his motor running. But, boy, we're asking him to do a lot, too. You know, he was a center that maybe stood there in the lane and was able to block shots because of his size in high school. And now we got him almost guarding guards when you got to guard guys that are running around and 6'5", 6'4", guys that can shoot the ball. That's not putting him in the best position. That's why the loss of – that's why I said so many times that I thought we needed Marv and we need Kenny, because those guys, we can sub them in there a little bit better. But it'll be interesting. It'll be a good test for Didi this week.
Yes, it certainly will. You know, Goins, a redshirt freshman, he was averaging 13.5 minutes per game in Big Ten play, had established himself as a pretty solid, you know, force within the paint for this team. And really, you know, solidifying the strong rotation that this Michigan State men's basketball team has, defense, rebounding, Goins was solid for this squad, folks. So his absence will likely mean an increased role for sophomore forward Marvin Clark, who played a season-high 22 minutes against the Hoosiers. Sophomore Javon Bess could also see an increased role with Goins out. Isaac, has it surprised you that we haven't seen more of Bess this year? I mean, Bess didn't even play a minute during that Indiana game.
Well, and Bess started off the season strong as well against Kansas. He had 6 very important points for the Spartans in the first half, right when everybody else was kind of sputtering out of the gate. Denzel Valentine hadn't gotten it going just yet. And I thought Bess would take over this season and become sort of an undersized 4 for the Spartans, something that helped them space the floor, but also keep getting to the basket because of his guard skills. And then a few injuries, just a few knacks there, and we haven't seen much of him at all recently. So it has surprised me, but I look forward to seeing the increased roles of Javon Best, who at the start of this season I thought would be a major contributor for the Spartans, and Marvin Clark Jr., who I thought was the stellar standout freshman from last year.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, Best is coming off that broken foot from last year. And Izzo commented on why we didn't see Best against Indiana. And he just felt that he didn't fit the rotation at the time. And he wasn't just going to play him just to play him for a few minutes. So now I think with Goins out, now I think this opens up a window of opportunity for Best to solidify himself as maybe a force moving forward, especially as we inch closer and closer to March. Also, interesting connection here. Tom Izzo was asked today about the conversation between Matt Costello and Denzel Valentine, which has certainly blossomed over the years. They both came in the same year at Michigan State. And Izzo even referenced how Costello, Valentine, and now Denver Nugget, Gary Harris, how close those three were when they were all three on campus. Here it is.
You know, I don't know where they first got to know each other. I think it was back in AAU ball and everything. But when they came here, it was Matt, Zell, and Gary. And everywhere you went, it was Larry, Curly, and Mo. You know, those three guys were walking around campus together. And they'd be in your working out together. They were always together. They lived together. I mean, it was a cool relationship. And, you know, both their parents are at every game, and so they become close. And I think it's neat. You know, you got two people that came in at the same time and have worked their way into having their greatest year, their senior year, and pull for each other. You know, I said sometimes Zell will come over and say, we got to get the ball inside more. And I agree. And sometimes Matt will say, you know, I got to set better screens for Zell, you know, because Day-Day's probably calling him and telling him he should do that. And it's been a really neat relationship. It's not like they're the same kind of people. They're sort of opposites in some ways, but they're both good students. They both care about winning. They both have great families. They're both great teammates. They're the salt and pepper of the world. Two guys that I think will remain friends for a long time after they're here.
I absolutely love that. They are the salt and pepper of the world. Izzo always comes up with great quotes. But yes, I mean, the relationship that that Denzel Valentine has with, of course, you know, Matt Costello is something that has always intrigued me throughout their respective careers at Michigan State. And yeah, I remember, you know, now that Izzo mentioned it during the presser today, I remember, you know, Costello, Valentine, and Harris being just, you know, again, like the Three Stooges, always together. You know, there was just an instant chemistry there. And I'm pretty sure you saw that chemistry on Sunday, Isaac, as Gary Harris was in town. I know I saw a few pictures of Gary, you know, with his hand around Denzel Valentine, a fantastic performance for him. Actually, I want to note this as well. It actually has led now to a back-to-back outing as Denzel Valentine is now the back-to-back winner of the Big Ten Player of the Week now for a second week in a row. Pretty cool stuff. But that relationship has always intrigued me because, you know, you see their interaction on the court. It's great when you have, you know, a guard and big man sort of connection because it just seems to trickle down to the rest of their teammates.
Well, and it helps having that big little connection as well because when it's two guards who just really know each other and are brothers on the court or whatever, they can monopolize the play. They really can. It can just be passed back and forth before one of them cuts because they think they have a favorable path to go down or something like that. When it's a guard and a big man, you get the leadership on all fronts. So Costello can tutor the young Deontay Davis and Kenny Goins and things like that, while Denzel Valentine can focus on the guard play. And that's huge for the Spartans. And it's so easy to forget that Gary Harris is the same age as these guys. He seems so much older, but he's only 2 years in the NBA and left as a sophomore.
Just because he's in the NBA, it just seems like, oh, man, he's off to bigger and better things, I could say, quote, unquote, right?
Yeah.
But I always imagine if Gary would have stayed, I mean, just how good this how better this team would be. You know what I mean? I mean, unbelievable stuff. Also, it seemed as though this year the Izzone and the crowd energy inside the Breslin. It's always been good, but it seems to be ramped up a bit this season. Izzo also commented on that.
It's funny you asked that question because, you know, we've been sold out for a long time, and yeah, but for some reason this year, I don't know if I've had people mad at me because I said the students got to get better or the crowd's got to get better, and, you know, who am I to tell those people? Well, I'm your basketball coach. I'm the guy that knows what a difference they make. I'm the guy that knows what an impact they can have. I think this team has worked their tail off. You know, we're talented, but we're not mega talented, meaning we have a lot of very good players, not as many superstars. But I think this crowd this year have been superstars. You know, I mean, it used to be where we were one of the top five hardest places to play all the time. We've kind of fell out of that a little bit, you know. And it seems like we've regained that when we needed them most. They're a perfect fit. It's almost like, you know, Zell and Matt especially, you know, Tom, those guys are the energized bunnies, and our crowd has been that. They're the perfect fit for each other, the blue-collar approach to things. I think the one thing that both are doing is having some fun doing their job. And when we lost those two home games, the crowd was 80% of the reasons that we had a chance to beat Nebraska. We didn't play very well in those two games, but the crowd kept us in one, and we didn't even let the crowd get involved in the other. But they've been phenomenal all year. I said Christmas, you know, I thought it would be a downtime after Christmas. The students weren't here. This whole community has rallied around these guys, and it's been much appreciated. And you're right, I say it often, which means, unfortunately or fortunately, look at it whatever way you want, it means that it did take a little dip, because if it was at this level all the time, I wouldn't be mentioning it. So, you know, I think there's a fever around this community right now. You know, football starts it, and you know, we get it. And we're all trying to learn how to be a championship organization. It's not just the athletic department or the university. It's everybody. And I like the direction we're heading. I like the direction we're heading in football, you know. And we're not there yet, you know. I mean, right now Kansas got it in basketball, you know, but we're not far behind, and we're gaining momentum.
Very interesting quote there because, yeah, I don't know what it is about this season, but the crowd energy at the Breslin has been unlike any other season I've covered this team at. And, you know, a game that really stands out in my mind is that Michigan State and Maryland game. I mean, the energy in the building for that one was just electrifying. So, yeah, and I agree with Izzo. I think Kansas is like the creme de la creme. I've heard, you know, I've never been there, but I've heard going into Jayhawk City, it is absolutely insane in the membrane at a game there. And I think everybody else is just playing catch-up right now.
Well, another team that I'd throw in there is the Duke Blue Devils.
Oh, of course.
Cameron
right.
Crazies, you can't beat that. I actually have a friend at Duke right now who's in the process of setting up his tent in preparation for the UNC-Duke matchup.
Of course, rivalry week.
It's a huge game, and it's a great school to attend a basketball game at. I've had the pleasure of going inside Cameron Indoor Stadium, most historical stadium in the U.S. for college basketball.
Lucky guy there, Isaac. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will have Tickle Tuesday for you. Don't go anywhere. We put a bow on current sports when we get back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. You know, we know here at Current Sports how crazy the work week can be. It can be very stressful, especially during the beginning days, meetings and board proposals and just trying to get work done, right? Trying to stay productive. So we love to end every Tuesday, starting as of last week, with a segment that we call Tickle Tuesday. You know, Isaac, I didn't like Tickle Me Tuesday. I don't know. It just kind of sounded weird. Tickle Me Tuesday.
I noticed the change, yeah.
Yeah, Tickle Tuesday. I think Tickle Tuesday is smoother. So we're dubbing it Tickle Tuesday, where we bring to you some funny moments from the sporting world. Here we go.
Gentlemen, in exactly 5 days, we will be $100 billion richer.
All right, how can you not love that intro, right? Shout out to Austin Powers, love that movie. Okay, first one for you, Isaac. Jay Billis, he put a jinx on Buddy Hield at the free throw line that would have ideally maybe iced the game. 25 seconds left. Buddy, he doesn't miss from the free throw line.
90% on the season.
90% from the season. Jay Billis does this, and you'll see what happens.
Well, now Kansas will be able to take the last shot on the road. Boy, blockouts become important. Buddy Hield's not going to miss this free throw. He has a 90% free throw shooter. But you got to be prepared for pressure here if you're Kansas.
He did miss it.
Holy cow. That might be the most surprising thing of the year. Wow.
And guess what? Kansas ended up winning that game. Are you kidding me? Crazy stuff. So, Jay Billis, yeah, you tickled me, dude. You really tickled me with that one. All right. Also, you have to check out this interview with Mike Titus. Now, if you don't know who Mike Titus is, he's like this, I guess you could say, like sports guru who writes for Grantland. Check out this bite of what he had to say about the Denzel Valentine injury.
It's obviously Michigan State. Did you ask Denzel Valentine about the conspiracy? You know the conspiracy theory around him, right?
He wasn't
actually hurt. His knee, the knee injury he had where he was out for 4 games,
uh-huh.
That was all made up. I'm going to indulge me for a second.
I will.
Tom Izzo knew that Michigan State was peaking too soon. It's December. They're 13-0. Best start. He's looking around like, what is happening? We're going to hit our peak in January, and then we're gonna fall. So he's like, hey, Denzel, come here. I've won 400 Big Tens. I'm tripping over Big Ten championships when I wake up in the morning. I don't want a Big Ten championship. I want another national title. I only have one of those. So here's what I need you to do. We're going to pretend like you have knee cartilage, which is – What even was that? Like
Who knows? It was a made up meniscus for all we know.
Who has surgery in his back in like 2 weeks? If you have surgery, you're out for a while, right? Like, I'm not a doctor, but come on. So, and by the way, he wears leggings, so like he's covering his knee.
Yeah. So basically, Mark Titus of Grantland went on his big rant last night on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt about how he thinks that the Denzel Valentine injury was staged by head coach Tom Izzo. I'll be sure to post this video on our Facebook page. It was very interesting. I was actually folding clothes last night and had to do a double take when he said it. Scott Van Pelt had a great time with it. It was very funny stuff. All right, folks. Well, that is how we end today's Current Sports. Thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in. You have been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic afternoon. And be easy, people.